And I remind you, our fill-ins this morning are on the back of our printed order. This morning we read about the last sign that John gives in his gospel. And it's probably the sign that is the biggest sign that we hear. Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead. Out of all the miracles that Jesus has done, this one is given most coverage in the Gospels. There's so much I could say from the passage this morning, and I know that I'm not going to do justice to it in one sermon, but the good thing is, because the clock's changed, we've got an extra hour. Let's set the scene. Remember from last week we heard that Jesus had made that claim to be divine. I and the Father are one. And the Jews were so incensed that they picked up stones and they wanted to stone him there and then. Not for what he had done, but they wanted to stone him for blasphemy. So what happens is Jesus and his disciples leave Jerusalem and they go across the Jordan a few miles away. And news comes to Jesus that Lazarus, one of his close friends, is ill. Now, the word here for ill is not a sort of man flu. He's not got a man flu. The word says that he is sinking or that he is deadly sick. So he is seriously ill. Now, this family, Lazarus and Martha and Mary, they're amongst Jesus' closest friends. Now, Jesus loved Martha and her sister Mary and Lazarus. And John is at pains to tell us this. He loved these people. So the sister sent word to Jesus, Lord, the one you love is ill. Now, the first thing that must surprise us in this story is the way that Jesus reacts. How do most of us react when we hear that a good friend or a family member is seriously ill? If it is possible, most of us drop everything we've got and get to see the person or at least see the family as quickly as we can. Yeah? Yeah. That's what we do. Jesus doesn't do that. His reaction couldn't be more different. So when Jesus heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed where he was for two more days. And then he said to his disciples, let's go back to Judea. And that's our first fill-in this morning. When Jesus hears that his friend Lazarus is seriously ill, he stays where he is for 2 days. Stays where he is. Doesn't send word to Mary and Martha that he's soon coming. It looks as though he doesn't even tell his disciples when he first hears that Lazarus is ill. He seems to tell them a couple of days later. And Jesus chooses to wait. He waits until Lazarus dies. Because if we read further on, it says Lazarus has been dead 4 days by the time he makes it there. Now we've got to try and sort of walk through this story this morning without getting to the end. We know the end. It's like when we sort of look at the resurrection of Jesus. We know he's going to be resurrected. We've got to try and walk through this story. Try to get into the minds and the hearts of the folk there and not jump too quickly ahead. Mary and Martha are hoping that Jesus is going to come to see their brother before he dies. Because in the back of their mind, they're hoping that Jesus can save him. Yet Jesus deliberately chooses not to go there. And Mary and Martha bury their brother, Lazarus, wondering where Jesus, their friend, is. Yet John is at pains to say he loved this family. How do we explain that? Fill-in number two says the love of Jesus doesn't protect us from illness. Now that's not answering the question, but I will in a minute. The love of Jesus doesn't protect us from illness. We are human. Christians, at least most of them, are human. We are susceptible to illness and disease along with the rest of humanity. The love of Jesus doesn't separate us or in some way protect us from illness. So we can't be surprised when we or someone we love becomes ill. Spurgeon wrote this: "The love of Jesus does not separate us from the common necessities, the infirmities of human life. Men of God are still men. The covenant of grace is not a charter of exemption from consumption, rheumatism, or asthma." The love of Jesus will not protect us from illness. So how does Jesus explain his delay? Why did he delay? This is what we read. When Jesus hears of Lazarus' illness, he says, "This illness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." Now, Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed where he was 2 more days. And then he said to his disciples, "Let us go back to Judea." There's a connection between the love that Jesus has for this family and his delaying. And that's the tension in the whole thing. Filling number 3 says, love moved Jesus to let Lazarus die. Now that's a crazy statement. Write that one down and we'll go through it. Love moved Jesus to let Lazarus die. Let me try and explain what I think John is saying here. Jesus loves this family. Jesus loved Lazarus, so he doesn't heal Lazarus. How is that love? It's the hard thing. How is he being loving? What does it mean to be loved by Jesus? It's when Jesus in his love gives us what we need the most. In this situation, Jesus was going to give this family what they needed more than even Lazarus being alive. And I think this is the key to this passage. Jesus gave this family a greater picture of the glory of God. They would end up witnessing firsthand the glory of God in Jesus. And that was his gift to them. Let's get really existential this morning. What is the meaning of life? Well, you know, what are we doing here? One thing we've got to recognize, to have meaning and to have purpose in life today, we must at some time in our life come across the glory of God seen in Jesus. Because I want to maintain this morning, until we have realized who God is and what God's glory is like, then we have never fully lived. And I think it was the same back there in Lazarus' time. Jesus let Lazarus die to show the glory of God to his family, to his disciples, and to those who were to witness this miracle afterwards. And this is love. This is what Jesus is saying. This is the love of Jesus, to bring each of us to a knowledge of the glory of God. Not a head knowledge, but a deep, heartfelt awareness that we know that God is God. That we know that God is glorious. That we know that God is above and beyond all things. And that this God comes to us and loves us. And that's what Jesus was doing for this family and for Lazarus. John says this later. Jesus says this later in John's Gospel. "Father, I want those you have been that have been given to me to be with me. To be with me where I am," and it's this bit here, "and to see my glory, the glory you have given me, because you loved me before the creation of the world." And that was the one thing Jesus wanted to give that family there. And it's the one thing Jesus wants to give us today, before we die. We must see the glory of God. We must recognize who God is and what God can do for us. And then we begin to have this life that Jesus talks about eternal life, about life in all its fullness. Back to the story. Jesus arrives at the home of Mary and Martha and Lazarus. Lazarus now has been dead for 4 days. When Jesus saw Mary weeping and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in his spirit and troubled. "Where have you laid him?" he asked. "Come and see, Lord," they replied. Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, "See how he loved him." Fill in number four says, here we see the humanity of Jesus. Jesus wept. Jesus is face to face with his friends whose brother has died, and he's reduced to tears. The shortest verse in the Bible is Jesus wept. But it's the verse that tells us not just so much about Jesus, it tells us so much about the Father that he is representing. Jesus cries in the same way that we have cried over so many situations. And although we've been charting through John's Gospel the divinity of Jesus, this morning we see his humanity. With his friends Mary in tears, Jesus breaks down in tears. We have a God who knows what grief is like. And some of us have got to hear that this morning. We have a God who cries in Jesus. We have a God who has known what we have gone through when we have lost loved ones and friends and family in grief. Tells us in the prophet Isaiah, says that Jesus was a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. He knew what it was like to grieve. We're also told that Jesus at this point was deeply moved in his spirit and troubled. They have a bit of a problem with this word, sort of moved in his spirit and troubled. I think the reading we got was he was angry. That was one of the things. He is deeply moved is another one. The root word is a funny sort of root word. It talks about a snorting of a horse. He's so moved by what happens. You get this sort of almost groaning from Jesus. Because his friend has died. Jesus in his humanity shares many of the emotions that we have. He is not aloof. God is not aloof. He didn't shield himself from being what it means to be human. He was not ashamed to cry at the death of his friend Lazarus, and he's not unwilling to suffer the anguish and pain of bereavement. That is God. And number five says, like us, Jesus experienced grief. We've got to remember that when we go through some kind of grieving process and our whole world has fallen in and we wonder where God is. We know where God has been. God in Jesus has grieved as we are grieving. And this was witnessed by the folk who saw it. The Jews said, see how he loved him. There was no doubt that Jesus loved this family. Number six quickly follows on. In the tears of Jesus, we see the love of Jesus. If we ever think that God is not a God of love, then we must return to this story again and again and again and see how Jesus reacts. Jesus experiences real grief at the death of his friends. Jesus sheds real tears at the death of Lazarus. And in the tears of Jesus, not only do we see the love of Jesus, we also see the love of God. And that's a picture of God the Father, a Father who weeps over grief. God is a loving Father who waits for the prodigal to come home. God is the loving Father who experiences anguish over what his children have found themselves doing. God knows what it was like when Jesus looked over the whole of Jerusalem as he made his way to that cross and says, they've got it all wrong. I don't know what you would have done. I think I would have burned them. I think I would have called down fire from heaven. And Jesus cries because the whole city of Jerusalem has got it wrong and they're going to crucify him. And they're going to fail to see God the Son who was in their midst. Where some of us might want retribution, Jesus brings tears. In God's day, especially amongst the Greeks, in Jesus' day when he was here amongst the Greeks, this idea of God being a suffering God was just a crazy idea. The idea that the God of the whole universe in some way suffers or in some way feels emotion was a sign of weakness. So God never did that. Their idea of God was far apart. God was away. God looked at his creation, wasn't involved in it, just ruled and reigned over it. But he stood passively by. Not our gods. And that was the big shock for the Greeks at that time. And that was the big shock even for the Greeks, the Jews. The Jews should have known that they had a God who loves and who grieves and who cries, because they should have known their Old Testament. And I want to give you a couple of verses that we get from the Old Testament that shows just how much God is moved by our situation. It says in Psalm 116, "For you, Lord, have delivered me from death, my eyes from tears, and my feet from stumbling." Psalm 126, "Those who sow with tears will reap with songs." And one of my favorite passages from the book of Revelation, "And God will wipe away every tear from every eye. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things have passed away." Just one wee aside before I sort of wind this up. Fill in number 7 says, death could not exist in the presence of Jesus. Now, I don't want you to make a big sort of big theology over this. And don't hang me for it. But here's an interesting fact. Every time Jesus is faced with death, in the New Testament, he turns it into life. And I'd sort of never seen that before. Remember the widow at Nain? Jesus is going one way, they're all coming out the other way on the funeral procession. And this poor woman, her only son has died. And they're all grieving and they're coming out. And I like to put myself into these stories. Can you imagine sort of going to the crematorium and you're sort of sitting there waiting on the hearse coming, and the hearse sort of comes and Jesus sort of comes out before they take the hearse into the crematorium. And he says, "It's okay." And he sort of touches that coffin and the person becomes alive again. That's what happened to the widow of Nain. Jairus' daughter. Remember Jairus? Jairus was a leader in the synagogue, and it must have taken an awful lot of courage for the leader of the synagogue to come to Jesus. But he was desperate because his daughter was ill. His daughter was 12 years old and she was dying. Now, we're not told in the story. I think he would have tried everything. I think he'd seen every doctor, every quack, every teacher in the synagogue. They would have laid on hands, they would have laid on everything for his 12-year-old daughter. He was the leader of the synagogue. And she was dying. And I think it was a last resort for him. And what he does is he goes and he finds Jesus, and Jesus is teaching. And he says to Jesus, "You know, this is my situation. My daughter is so ill. Can you do something?" And Jesus keeps on teaching. And then one of his mates comes and says, "It's okay, don't bother the teacher, because she's dead. Your daughter has died." And this guy is overwhelmed with grief. And Jesus sort of finishes his little bit of teaching and he says, "I'll come back with you." And he comes back and they're already mourning. The poor wee girl is laid out. And Jesus says, "No, she's okay, she's just sleeping." And they say, "Don't make a fool of the dead." They laughed at him. "Don't be so stupid," he says. "Where's your pastoral care?" And he goes into that room and he prays for this girl and she becomes alive again. And we've got Lazarus today. And in the presence of death, I think it's the compassion of Jesus that just takes over. He says, "I know I can't do it for everyone, but here's 3 people that I've met in my journey and they're going to live." And that's what he does. And he lays hands on them or whatever he does. I don't know how he does it. And the power of God just raises his people back from the dead. Death could not exist in the presence of Jesus. Jesus can bring back the dead to life. Another thing I want to say about this is no one else can. No one else is claiming to do that. We are crazy enough to say that our God in Jesus can raise the dead. You don't go to a doctor when somebody's died. It's too late. Go to a doctor when you're living. They can do great things. Once they're dead, they come to me. And we think that's it, finished. But here we have instances where Jesus says it's not finished. I can raise the dead. So at the end of the story, you know, what do we do and what do we learn? Number 8 says, many believed when they saw Lazarus alive again. I can't imagine this situation. He goes to where the grave is, they roll the stone away and out, and he sort of says, you know, Lazarus, come out. That must have been an amazing situation. Because all these folk are wondering what's going to happen. Lazarus, come out. And the crowd must have been amazed because there was not one person apart from Jesus in that crowd who expected Lazarus to come alive again. There was not one of them. Mary and Martha, he sort of spoken to them and they talked about the time of resurrection. And I believe my brother will rise at the day of resurrection. That's going to be a long time. And that's what they were thinking. Some folk in the crowd were saying, why did this guy not come in time? Why did he not come early? We saw him giving sight to a man who was born blind. If he could give sight to a man who was born blind, why didn't he come back here and save Lazarus from dying? They were complaining about him. Because he's dead now and it's too late. And then they couldn't believe their eyes. I sort of looked at some of the wee pictures I've got. They have sort of pictures on the internet that I sort of get for all my wee fillings. And they've got them all like mummies. You know, you see Lazarus coming out and they've wrapped them all in bandages. Didn't like any of those. But I don't know how that happened. And out comes Lazarus, alive again. And this is what happened. Therefore, many of the Jews who had come to visit Mary and had seen what Jesus did put their faith in him. You would think anyone would put their faith in Jesus if they saw somebody come alive again, wouldn't you? Because I think believing in Jesus is not a leap of faith. You know, they used to talk about belief was a leap of faith. I don't think it's a leap of faith. I think it's a step of faith. And I think the step's not very big. What John has done and what we've been looking at in John's Gospel is he's been collecting all these stories together. And he keeps telling us, he gives us stories and he gives us signs. And he says, weigh up the evidence and decide for yourselves. That's why he put it in his Gospel. That's why we're reading it this morning. Weigh up the stories, weigh up the evidence and decide for yourself who Jesus is. And that's what these people did at the resurrection of Lazarus. Dead men don't rise from the dead. That's just a fact. Unless someone has the power of God. And that's how they thought. No one can bring someone back alive again from the dead. Unless they have the power of God in them. And they saw what had happened, and many believed. And if you're swithering this morning whether to believe in Jesus as the Son of God, then let this story, with all the other ones we've been looking at, convince you. Because if he's not the Son of God, the one who wants to be a part of your life, the one who wants to take you into a new relationship with God, the one who wants to give you life in all its fullness, then what the dickens happened on that day when Lazarus rose from the dead? Because you've got to explain that to me. Because I think it was the power of God in Jesus. Because the story goes on, because even those who didn't believe in Jesus didn't deny what happened. I think that's very strange. Some of them saw and believed. Some of them saw and went telltale to the Pharisees. Let me tell you what he's doing now. You've got to do something now. He's brought back somebody from the dead. Can you imagine that? You're plotting to kill this Jesus. And he said, do you hear what he's done now? And fill in number 9 says, raising Lazarus from the dead sealed the fate of Jesus. And this is what they say when they go to the Jews. What are we accomplishing? The Pharisees asked. Here is a man performing many signs. If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him. And then the Romans will come and take away our temple and our nation. This is the whole religious establishment that are against Jesus. Look what they say. He's doing miracles that we don't understand. If he keeps doing that, they say, everyone's going to believe in him. And what were they worried about? Their church. If we let him go on like this, the whole of Jerusalem is going to believe in this Jesus, and our Judaism is finished. Even the Pharisees who were against Jesus couldn't refute what he did. It's crisis point, lads. That's what they're saying. If he keeps going on like this, we are going to have no religion. We must do something. And they were right. When you hear what Jesus has done, you've got to do something. He changed water into wine. He healed a man's son at a distance. He healed the lame man at the pool. He fed 5,000. He can walk on water. He gives sight to a man born blind. And here this morning he's saying he can even raise someone from the dead. We must do something. Believe in who he is, the Christ, the Son of God. Stop doubting and commit your life to the only one who's going to give us abundant life. Believe what your mind is telling you, or go against what I would call this morning common sense. And incredibly, that's what the Pharisees did. They didn't deny what Jesus had done, but they can't believe. Because believing in Jesus would change every single thing they held dear. The temple will change, our nation will change, our law will change. And then, as sometimes happens at church meetings, it's normally the moderator who's got to get a grip of it when it's all going crazy. And this is what happens. Their moderator, the high priest, he says, "You know nothing at all." Moderators say that quite a lot. You know nothing at all. You do not realize that it's better for you that one man die for the people than the whole nation perish. The moderator has decided Jesus must die. That's where they get to this whole story. They don't deny that Lazarus was raised from the dead. He says, we can't let this man keep on going like this. The more signs he does, the more miracles he does, the more folk are going to believe in him. We've got to take him out. That's what they do. I read stories like this in the Bible, and I think the older I'm getting, the worse I'm getting. I cannot believe how folk can't believe. Sorry, I just don't get it. Once folk hear the stories, once folk hear what has happened, once we've sort of pieced all these things together in John's Gospel, I am amazed that there are people today who don't believe. I'm amazed. I think it takes faith today not to believe. I think it takes more faith not to believe than it does to believe. Because John in his gospel has come to the last of his signs, because what happens now is it's just the whole road to Jerusalem. And we find Jesus dying for the sin of the world. Isn't that a great story? I've been a wee bit excited this morning. I don't know about you, but I've fair enjoyed it. I've fair enjoyed it, because that's one of these basic stories that just says dead men don't rise from the dead unless God does it. And that's a God who loves us and the God who promises to be with us. Isn't that good? Good. Amen.